David is not.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this, February 11th, 2015, meeting of the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development. Thank you all for joining us today. We have two bills that we're going to be hearing today in public hearing. For our first order of business, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2279. And Mr. Brennan, would you please give us a little rundown on this bill, please?
Will do, Madam Chair. House Bill 2279 applies the definition of state government as it is defined in ORS 174.111 to clarify the meaning of the word state with regard to utility access to lands belonging to the state of Oregon. This measure is before us for the first time, has no subsequent referral, has no amendment, and we have received a notice of no revenue impact, but since it's not scheduled for a work session, we have not received anything from the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan. I believe we'll go start out with Mr. Callery, who is here representing the Port of Coos Bay, and will tee this bill up for us. Welcome, Mr. Callery.
Chair McEwen, Vice Chair Davis, and members of the committee, I'm Martin Callery. I'm Chief Commercial Officer for the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay. The reason that we're pursuing this particular piece of legislation is the fact that once the Coos Bay, once the Port of Coos Bay acquired the rail line and that runs through Western Lane, Western Douglas, and Coos County, a public utility who provides communication services decided that because we have a port commission appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, that made us a state agency. They then declared that they didn't have to pay any easement fees to use our rail corridor for about 6.25 miles of their infrastructure. And they refused to even discuss it. So we felt that this was something that needed to be clarified in state statute, and that's why I'm here today, is we believe this bill does clarify that, and I can answer any specific questions, but we just think it's a good thing that helps helps all types of utilities understand the playing field.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Mallory, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your testimony. What were the amount of fees prior to them ceasing to pay them?
I didn't bring that particular sheet with me, but I will say that prior to the port's acquisition of that portion of the rail line, they had been paying to the Central Oregon and Pacific Railroad, because they were leasing that from the Union Pacific, a marginal amount. It was, I want to say, less than $400 a year, which was not even at market rate. The firm that we use to manage all of our crossing agreements and easement uses had attempted to get them to come up to market rate for several years, and they wouldn't even respond. So we have a legal counsel in Coos Bay, and they are finally entering into negotiations on this issue. They had an engineer who decided he had a law degree and started spouting off a lot of state statutes, and our attorney said, you really don't understand what you're talking about. So, but we're trying to get it up to, I think, about, I'm going to say it's about $2,000 a year.
Any other questions for Mr. Callery? Mr. Callery, could you give us a sense of how many of these contracts you have as the operator of a 120-some-mile rail line?
All of the public utility crossings or public road crossings are maintained by public agencies, and we do not charge anything for those. All of the utility crossings of the rail line, there are probably 25 to 30 within the 134 miles of the rail line, and then there are, I'd say, almost 100, in fact, I think it's about 118 private road crossings. They're either private residential crossings or commercial agricultural crossings. And the firm that we work with on the crossings has a schedule of payments for those and the fees. And we very rarely do we have anybody object to the structure of that fee schedule.
So this is common practice across the rail industry. It's nothing that's unusual for this particular customer.
No, and the firm agreement. We use manages these types of crossing agreements and easement right-of-ways for, I would say, 80 or 90 short line railroads, and possibly does work for some of the Class 1 railroads.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Pretty straightforward.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And we'll be notifying, making notice when the hearing is scheduled, a work session is scheduled.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coward. I will close the hearing on House Bill 2279 and open a public hearing on our second bill of the day, which is House Bill 2512. And Mr. Brennan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. House Bill 2512 allows for the operation of motorcycles and mopeds on the shoulder of a highway during instances of traffic congestion. As with the last bill, we have no amendment on this measure. It has received a statement of no revenue impact, and because it's not scheduled for work session, it is no fiscal statement has been issued as of yet by the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Thank you. And on our witness list, the first party up to testify on this bill is Troy Costales from the Oregon Department of Transportation. Welcome to our committee, Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales. I'm the manager of the Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. The bill before you today, I'd like to raise three particular areas related to the way the language is crafted, but also other areas of statute as it relates to operation of a vehicle on a roadway. There are some safety and operational concerns with what is being presented. First is just the base definition of a shoulder of a roadway. That means any paved or unpaved area to the side of the road that is typically being used by pedestrians, is being used in order to shore up and be the side of the roadway in order to keep the roadway in place, but also then for emergency vehicles if they need to proceed to something that is farther down the road. There are places within the state that jurisdictions have named these shoulders as bicycle lanes, and they are signed and striped or symbols painted on the ground related to naming those shoulders as bicycle lanes. Currently, the use of the shoulder does not show in the definition in statute for a motorized vehicle to be able to use that to continue on down the street. It's for emergency only area. The second is in relationship to the definition of motorcycles, and attached to the testimony presented to you are some examples of sometimes motorcycle configurations that many people don't recognize are motorcycles, which is a three-wheeled vehicle. And those can come in different shapes and sizes, including some recent models that have been put on the market that are literally the same size of a passenger car. But they just happen to have three wheels, so they come under the classification nationally and within the state as a motorcycle. And the size of the vehicle is part of the concern in that many people that would be driving their passenger car won't understand that that's a motorcycle if they see it go down the emergency lane. It may be tempting for individuals in motor vehicles to think that they're allowed to be able to go that way as well. Plus the width of the vehicle, there are places within the state. The shoulder size may be 10 to 12 feet. It may drop to 2 feet. It may completely disappear going over bridges or under bridges or in areas of roads that have an off-ramp and an on-ramp. The shoulder doesn't continue unless you take the off-ramp down the way that is leading for you. This bill is applicable to all roads. It is not specific to interstates or state highways. It is every road and street within the state. And so from an operational point of view, one of the items that was raised to us was the issue of maintaining the shoulder. So if a vehicle is operating down that shoulder, does that public jurisdiction take on some sense of liability if they've not swept or cleaned, or there's a vehicle that has been tagged for tow and it's not been removed? Does that then all of a sudden fall on that road authority to have to worry about if that section of road becomes used more like a travel lane? And so, Madam Chair, the testimony presented to you and the pictures is mainly just to let you see how there's connectivity with other statutes, such as the bicycle lane, also in relationship to how drivers have to yield to bicyclists in the lane, but then the operational concern about how the vehicles would be proceeding through there and that it's on all roads and streets. And it doesn't define what the traffic backup could be. It could be a traffic signal that's turned red or a stop sign if there's a queue of cars. The bill doesn't define what the congestion, the purpose of the congestion, which would be, you know, for motorcyclists, that'd be hard to understand up front what it may be that's causing the backup. But this would allow the use of the vehicle on the shoulder in those types of settings as well. And Madam Chair, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Costales. Are other states employing this measure?
Madam Chair, there is no other state that is currently has this in law. The closest would be within the state of California, and the way their vehicle code is structured, use of the shoulder and or in between cars is not deemed illegal, but there's nothing in the California statute that actually calls this out as a legal passing maneuver. State of California, through the California Highway Patrol, has initiated a study because so many people in the United States turn to them and say, you have this practice going on, so what's it like, safe or unsafe, what's the determination? So the California Highway Patrol did initiate a study a year and a half ago to look at the situation. We've heard that initially the data was going to be released in January of this year. The researcher sent us a note just a couple weeks ago because we knew this bill was coming before you, and the research group related to that data said we're not going to have it available till late March, maybe early April. But that'll be the first domestic situation where somebody's actually evaluated the use of the center lane or the shoulder, because California right now is the only one where it actually officially is taking place.
Right. Thank you. Questions from the panel? Yes, Representative Bentz.
And you, and thank you, Mr. Speaker, Madam Chair. The question, I guess, you may have said this and wasn't paying adequate attention to hear it, but the rumble strips we now have, which seem to create great difficulty for folks, what do they do for motorcycles and mopeds?
Madam Chair and Representative Bentz, the rumble strips, state of Minnesota earlier or late last year issued a notice that they saw with motorcyclists and rumble strips that a rider, advanced rider that's been riding for a while knows how to handle that particular issue and how to traverse them, but anybody that's new, it throws them a bit of a curveball because they're not used to that type of an impact on the road. And we in Oregon employ a lot of rumble strips, and mainly because of runoff the road or the side of the road, the way the roadside culture is. So, you know, from a rider point of view, and you have some riders here, that would be a great question to ask them. But it does, from what we've heard from the state of Minnesota, they clearly have shown for a brand new rider, it does present a problem.
Follow up.
Yes, sir.
So, are there areas in that you would say would lend themselves to this type of use in our systems of roads, where you could post them and say motorcycles are allowed here?
Madam Chair and Representative Vince, not prepared to be able to answer that particular question. The main thing I wanted to make sure to do today was to give you, you know, the links and the issues that surround this particular practice and some areas that may not be real apparent by the way the shape and face of the bill.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Gorsuch.
So to follow up on Representative Bentz's question, is there anybody within ODOT that would have the ability to make that assessment? I mean, it's kind of putting you on the spot here, but would we have a capability to do some sort of a study where we could say certain stretches would be okay and other stretches would not?
Madam Chair and Representative Gorsuch, part of for those that have had the pleasure of being before in earlier sessions, what I typically come to this table is a lot with a lot of the facts, the research, the crash data. And for good or for ill, that's part of my reputation and what I bring to you. There isn't any of that. There are no data related to this. The one single piece potentially to look at within the state of Oregon is to say where there may be traffic in a way where a motorcyclist was rear-ended. and look at the certain stretches of road where there would potentially be the preponderance of congestion. So we looked at 10 years of data in the Tri-County area around Portland, mm-hmm. just on the interstates, to see is there an issue of death or serious injury in those scenarios where a motorcyclist has been rear-ended, and there were none. There were crashes, and there were some minor injuries, but there were no deaths or serious injuries in that 10-year span, just on interstates, just in Portland. But to answer, in part, I apologize, completely answer Reverend Ben's question, we've not done that on all 80-plus thousand okay. miles of road, because it's hard. We can't tell from the crash data when is it congested, which is what the allowance is within this bill. Mm-hmm. I don't have the ability to come before you with that data, and I call it or research study. There isn't anything out there.
Okay.
So I feel that I'm not able to portray everything because it's not my normal forte to come before you with the information.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you. If these lanes were open for this use, then whatever their primary use is would become secondary. What is the primary use, or is there? Can we draw a conclusion from these shoulders that they're for something that the common perception is? Because my common perception is, if I'm in trouble, I pull over there and I can change my tire or whatever. Then would we have to, if we adopted this approach, re-educate everybody to say, no, the use of this is going to be people zooming up and down it just like it's another lane of traffic, but in this case for motorcycles?
Madam Chair and Representative Bench, you're correct. There, in the statute, the definition of a shoulder is, one, could be used by pedestrians, two, could be reused for emergency vehicles that are potentially stopped, and three, it is there to provide support to the road structure itself. That's the base definition of what a shoulder is. There are places within the state that the local road authority has also allowed them to become bicycle lanes by statutory allowance that they can declare them, but they're not all bicycle lanes. They have to be so declared and signed.
Thank you.
That would beg a question, thank you. So if it is a designated bicycle lane, can a motorcycle during slowdown circumstances use that bicycle lane?
Madam Chair, in statute under 811.440 is the definition of the bike lane and what vehicles can use them. They are human-powered, so mopeds can be there, but they have to be under human power. They cannot be under motorized power. And there's also statute 811.050 that then talks about how the motorized traffic needs to operate and how they can cross that lane, how they have to yield to that lane. But it is only currently under the definition for human-powered vehicles, pedestrians, human-powered vehicles, or mopeds that are under human power. No motorized vehicles allowed.
Thank you. Representative Lively.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I don't want to belabor this point, but I'm probably getting more confused as we're going along talking about what shoulders are, because I had more of the sense that Representative Benz did of what shoulders were supposed to be for. And now we're talking about, so you're telling me on some state highways, they're designated as bicycle lanes. So if they're designated as bicycle lanes and the only thing that can be in those lanes is human powered, so it goes back to the emergency. So if a person in an automobile has an emergency of a flat tire or something, then have they violated that somehow if they pull off there and use that?
Madam Chair, Representative Lively, no, they have the ability to use that as emergency, and emergency personnel still has the ability to use it. It's an added allowance given by statute to local communities to then name
to
those
that.
As a bicycle lane.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
You had one term that was interesting to me, was support the roadway. Mm. And so I'm just wondering what your definition is for support the roadway. Is it to support the roadway to get people with flat tires off? Is it to support the roadway for emergency vehicles? Is it to support the roadway for a motorcycle that all of a sudden is stalled because, you know, they've had to sit there and idle for so long and might be, you know, hot? Or I don't know. What's the definition?
Madam Chair and Representative McLean, in the definition of statute, support the highway means for the roadway itself.
Okay.
So that there's a water runoff or you don't end up getting okay. something that undercuts the road and starts to erode the concrete or the asphalt. So it's a structural definition of support the roadway as meant and defined in statute.
Thanks.
I have a rather odd question that I will raise. I have a photograph of my husband when he was about 19 and a college student in a college town, riding his motorcycle down a narrow alley And as he was proceeding down the alley, a very nice young lady opened her car door in front of him, and he took the door of the car off with his motorcycle. So if something like that happened on a shoulder, should we allow this law to pass, who would be responsible for the accident, the door opener or the motorcycle rider?
Madam Chair, it's a great question. Oregon does not assign fault in traffic crashes. We do in the database talk about what the potential errors leading up to the situation. And by statute, by the legislative body, the definition of $1,500 in damage to one piece of property or any kind of injury all the way to death then means it's reportable. As far as assigning fault or blame, the process does not do that. It would end up being in front of a court if that was the level that that particular situation went to talk about the balance of error between the individual parties that were involved.
Thank you. He survived.
Good. Sorry to hear that happened.
I have a picture of him holding the door. Any further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Is there anyone else in the room that would like to join us at the panel and testify on this bill today? We have testimony that has been provided by Bike Pack of Oregon. And we have a letter from Jonathan Manton from the Bicycle Transport Alliance testimony on this bill that we've received in a paper copy. I didn't see it up on OLIS. It may be up there relatively soon, but I haven't seen it yet. Okay. Mr. Fisher.
Chair McEwen, sorry, I forgot to sign up on the witness testimony.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Chair McEwen, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher. I live in House District 44. I am here just as me, not on behalf of my employer. I'd like to thank Representative Clem for introducing this bill on my behalf. My intent was just to open up the conversation that occurs every year around lane splitting or lane sharing, which has been discussed a little bit. And so the idea of that bill is, as discussed, you know, in California, motorcyclists can go in between lanes, in between two cars. And for motorcyclists, I should say I've been riding motorcycles and scooters and mopeds for, I think, 6 years now. So that's why I have an interest in this. For motorcyclists, we think that splitting lanes is efficient and convenient and great for people driving cars. It freaks them out. I understand that. I get that. And that's kind of why I introduced this bill. It's apparent that it was written a little bit too broad. My intent was, imagine in Portland in traffic on a highway, where there aren't typically bicycles or people, using the shoulder. Traffic is slowing down. You're stop and go. Your motorcycle's overheating. And can we use the shoulder, you don't want us to go in between. People are freaked out of going in between cars. I get that. How about just using the shoulder? So would definitely entertain amendments to narrow it to highways, to situations. But that's really the intent that I was getting at, and really introducing this bill just to kind of take the lane splitting conversation and open it up a little bit and think about it in a new way. And we've got some people from Bike Pack here who I think would like to talk a little bit more. I'm happy to answer any questions. Hopefully you've already asked them all, though.
Representative Bentz.
Good question. Joel, the problem that I've, as I've observed it, is that when I have seen people using that option, because of course people do, they always seem to be going pretty fast. Mm-hmm. It could be because I'm going so slow at that particular point, but man, they're really going. And so my mental image is people flying along at a huge rate of speed on a really narrow space, no way to stop. And that's what goes through my mind. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to, if I had a greater enthusiasm for the thought that they would go slowly, might be a more, that's why the human powered restriction is right in place, for obvious reasons. So, but to turn loose, I think my brother has three Harleys, and I wouldn't want to see him out there. There's no way he'd ever get those things stopped. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. So
no, yeah, absolutely. And so I didn't write that into the bill just because maybe I didn't think through enough to put it. But my idea really was that, you've got stop and go traffic. A motorcycle who's using the lane isn't flying down the highway. They're, traffic's going 5 to 10 and the motorcycle's going, 15 to 20. But part of it is that you're not you know, you're not in front of and behind cars that are stopping and going, which can be pretty scary, and that when you're stopped, your motorcycle's not overheating. So if you're using the shoulder, the idea would be, and happy to write this in as an amendment, you know, there's, you're not going more than 10 miles an hour beyond what traffic is, or cap it at 40 or 30 or what have you. But I absolutely understand your concern.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have a question about motorcycle technology. Is it common for motorcycles to overheat?
You know, you're going to have to ask the bike pack guys a little bit more. Mine has not overheated on me yet, but they're air-cooled, most of them. Mm-hmm. And so when they're, you know, when it's a hot day and you're moving slow, there's not a whole lot of air coming over them. They can.
Any other questions for this witness? Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to come and testify? Yes, ma'am. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paula Leslie. I represent Bike Pack of Oregon. We, as an organization, represent Ebate of Oregon, as well as Oregon's motorcycle riders. We are in favor of House Bill 2512, allowing motorcycles to use the shoulders, if available, on adjacent lanes of traffic during slowdowns and traffic jams. Just like with the bicycle community, the motorcycle community is asking that you take into account our specific, diverse, and unique safety needs as single-track vehicles sharing the road with many modes of traffic. We would like to see the speed limit reduced, regulation to where when the general traffic slows from 10 miles an hour to a stop, would allow the motorcycle rider to only travel up to 20 miles an hour on the shoulder. In many situations, we need to get out of harm's way, and Team Oregon has done a very good job in teaching us how to get out of a dangerous situation. They teach us SIPTE skills, and SIPTE is an acronym. The S stands for scan. We're always scanning as far in front of us, to the sides and our mirrors, and behind. At all times, our brain is always on a swivel. The I stands for identify, and we are identifying risks as well as our exit point if there is one. The next is to predict what the traffic is going to do based on their movements and their reactions to other traffic. You can always see when somebody is texting, because they look down and your car or vehicle, no matter what you're driving or riding, will always go where your eyes are going. And if we're doing our jobs and being aware, we're going to see that happening long before anything dangerous happens. So that's the predict part of SIPTE. The D is next, and the D is where you decide. You decide where you're going to go. You decide how you're going to communicate with traffic to try to get their attention, and we communicate by using our blinkers, using hand signals, and changing lane position. The E is the execute part of all of it. If something very dangerous is happening, if we see a vehicle coming up behind us and we're stopped and it doesn't look like they're slowing down, then we execute. Team Oregon teaches us this. So if we are going to execute, where are we to execute to, is my question, our question. We're escaping danger, and I think that's why we're not seeing tail-end collisions. I was at a stoplight the other day in town. This was not a highway or interstate. I was at a traffic light, and I was the first person in the row, and there was another row. There were adjacent lanes. Somebody's sitting there at the red light. In comes two motorcycles right behind that car, and behind them comes this big SUV, and they're not slowing down. I hear screeching on the road, and the next thing I know, I see the two motorcycles right between my car and the car next to me, and they were gone. They went right through the red light, but they were not in that traffic accident, and that car slammed into the car in front of him and kept going and going and going. And I don't know what happened that day. I don't know if it was a medical emergency, but he pushed the car in front of him right through the light. These things are happening all the time, and Team Oregon is teaching us how to maneuver our machines to escape these kinds of dangers. There's an issue with staying in the road on the lane with mechanical failure, as you've heard. A lot of motorcycles are air-cooled. A lot of the three-wheeled motorcycles that Troy suggested might be using those shoulders I believe, and I will check to confirm, but those are water-cooled. The next issue that would happen is there are health risks involved in sitting in lane of traffic. When you are on a motorcycle rider, or as a motorcycle rider, you're exposed to the elements. If it's 90 degrees outside, the pavement is baking, your motorcycle is blowing hot air on you, you're wearing your helmet and all of the heavy gear, and it's very easy to suffer from hyperthermia, and that's where the body overheats and it can't cool itself. The next issue, and it's not always sunny in Oregon, is being in drenching rain, just pouring down rain, shivering, and the rider not being able to get off and find shelter or warm up or get some help. So that is hypothermia, where the body is unable to warm itself. And this happens a lot with motorcycle riders. And the first thing we need to do is get off the road. When these things happen, if we're stuck in traffic, we definitely can't do that. According to recent studies by the National Highway Traffic Safety, they say that tailing collisions are the most common crash dynamic for all vehicles in the U.S. I think we're escaping some of those here in Oregon. Motorcycle lane sharing reduces congestion and helps to reduce fuel consumption. And even though California is one of the largest motorcycle states with some of the worst congestion, they remain the state with the fewest number of rear-end collisions and fewer motorcycle fatalities related to lane sharing than any other state in the nation. Riders run a risk of tailing collisions while sitting in traffic than when they are sitting in the lane, or when they are lane sharing. And some additional considerations to keep in mind is in a lane change impact, the rider has the chance to recover and remain upright. This is unlikely in a rear end contact. And number two, in a lane change impact, the rider has a chance to take evasive action and to avoid the car altogether. This, again, is unlikely in a rear-end impact. If the rider does go down in a lane change contact, the potential injuries are not as severe as those in a direct rear-end contact. In other words, when a motorcycle is in lane sharing, if a crash with a vehicle does occur, this effects of the crash will most likely be less serious than if they were sitting there. That is all I have for today. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Do you have any questions
Thank you,
for me?
Ms. Leslie. Do we have any questions for Ms. Leslie? Yes, Representative Davis.
Thank you. And thank you very much for coming to testify. Very interesting. And although this bill is not having to do with lane sharing per se, some of your testimony did go to that. And I would just note that I believe it's fairly common in Europe and most of the rest of the world, lane splitting. And it's actually the United States that is the where it's unusual. So it would be interesting to see the evidence from the other countries, which I haven't seen presented, and that isn't the bill we're hearing. But since your testimony did go to that, I would encourage in the future testimony, or if you bring that bill in future legislatures, maybe to bring the international data.
Madam Chair and Representative Davis, I'd be happy to send those to you in your email, and the rest of you if you wish.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair Davis. Ms. Leslie, I do have a question. You mentioned Abate and Team Oregon, and I just wanted to comment that I know a number of people who have taken advantage of the classes that are provided. And are you involved in that training that is available to our citizens in Oregon?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes. BikePack of Oregon and Abate of Oregon offer a 50% discount for any of our members who take the class. And I personally make sure that I take a class every year. And in addition to that, a motorcycle safety class that happens once a month in the town near me. So I am out all year round, if nothing else that month, but to take that class.
Well, it's very good work that is done, and whatever participation you have, we appreciate the good work, because it is keeping our motorcycle riders safer on our roads. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you so much for your testimony today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, I think, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to step forward and testify on this bill at this time? All right. Well, on that note, yes, Vice Chair Gorsuch.
I know this is unusual, but could we recall the inspiration for the bill?
Mr. Fisher?
Yes.
Mr. Fisher, would you be willing to join us for
just a moment?
A little bit longer. Thank you so much.
So you approached Representative Klemm to bring the bill forward. Had you ever done this bill before?
I did a bill similar last session that I think incorporated this idea and then another idea that was at a stoplight would allow a motorcycle to go to the front. And the idea there is basically the same as bicyclists, right?
Right.
You want to put the bicycles in front of the cars so that cars can see them. I used to live in Taiwan. Lots and lots of scooters there.
Right.
And the way it works in Taiwan is you've got bike boxes that are for both bicycles and scooters. And so, you know, at a stoplight, all the scooters and bicycles filter to the front. And when that light turns green, they accelerate faster than cars. And they're out in a pack on their own. You can look on Google Maps and you can see in some of these countries where, you know, there's a pack of motorcycles and way back here is a pack of cars and you're keeping them separate. And it's a lot safer that way.
Yes, Vice Chair Gorsuch.
So have you considered altering this bill so that it would become perhaps more of a study bill to explore some of the things that we've heard discussed, maybe working with ODOT so that we would have better data to maybe approach this?
I'm open to any alterations that you'd entertain, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Fisher, I have had the privilege of traveling to Taiwan in Taipei and then up Keelung Harbor I spent some time. And it is stunning, the number of mopeds and motorcycles that there are. And you're absolutely right. They swarm in the front. I was stunned when I first saw it.
Yep.
But it's very efficient, and it works actually quite nicely in that particular country. Thank you.
And many others.
Any other questions for Mr. Fisher before we excuse him for a second time?
Sorry about that.
Thank you so much. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2512 and turn our attention to Mr. Brennan to talk to us about Monday. This is more than likely the last Friday that we will cancel for a period of time as our bills start to come in and we have more work to do. Plan on 3 days a week from here on out, but we will not be meeting this Friday. And I'll turn it over to Patrick to talk about what's coming on Monday.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Monday we have three bills that we are going to schedule for public hearing. One will be dealing with directing the DMV to institute use of credit and debit cards at DMV locations. They, of course, have a policy option package to do that, so that'll be an opportunity for them to address the committee on that particular policy option package, which we probably won't hear the budget bill that deals with that. We also have a bill that deals with tax credits for brownfield reclamation. That's from a coalition in the Portland metro area. And then one of the state treasurer's bills we'll have dealing with pass-through revenue bonds. Those are our bills on Monday. And then in addition to some additional bills on Wednesday, we're also working on several informational meetings, among which being a briefing from the Transportation Forum on the work that they did preparing a potential transportation package for this session. We're talking about putting together a day where we bring in a lot of different transit agencies to talk to us about kind of what they're doing, what's going on with them. We're thinking about having a rail day to bring the class ones, the short lines, and some of the shippers on the rail, on our rail system to talk to us, a marine day to talk to port folks and port shippers, which has suddenly become pretty timely given what just occurred yesterday, City of Portland, and then also Aviation Day at some point as well. And some of those informational meetings, I believe it's your plan to hear bills and have an informational meeting during each of those. So.
Correct. So we'll start to mix it up a little bit with bills and a little bit of information. All right. And on that note, I believe we are adjourned. Thank you all. Adjourned. Thank you all.